Wind Down with Jana Kramer, an iHeartRadio podcast.
All right, guys, so we're so excited for today's podcast because we have two legends that are going to be on the show, Phil Donahue and Marlo Thomas. Phil, for those of you that don't know, and actually I knew the name, but he was basically the Oprah before Oprah.
He's the king of like daytime talk for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's won a ton of Emmys for Outstanding Talk Show. So, I mean, he was the first to...
He was the OG.
Yeah.
You know, and my parents have been here, my grandfather, you know, this past week, and we even asked them, we're like, hey, do you guys know Phil Donahue? And everyone kind of lit up. It was like, yeah, I used to watch the heck out of that show. I always used to watch it and this and that. And so, I mean, everybody knows Phil Donahue.
And then his wife, Marlo Thomas, who is actually, she was a guest on his show. And that's kind of when everyone saw them fall them in love because everyone knew that they saw the spark. So she's an actress. She was on a show. Actually, I was walking today with one of my girlfriends and she was on a show called That Girl. And they've been married for over 40 years and they have a book out, on our same imprint, with HarperCollins, and the book's called What Makes a Marriage Last, because they've been married for over 40 years. And what they did is they took 40 couples,
celebrity couples,
and they basically interviewed them because they're great at that. They're great at interviewing, obviously, Phil, and then, you know, same with Marlo. But they interviewed these couples, and it was so cool because, you know, we have a crash course in their book, and we got to read it, read a lot of it because we just got it the other day. And just to kind of hear the stories of some people that, you know, I really look up to, like Viola Davis and her husband, and, you know, Kelly Ripa, Mark Consuelos, Jamie Lee Curtis, and her husband, and... Go ahead, baby.
All the couples, they kind of have a requirement for all the couples that they've been married a certain amount of years or have been in, like they have Elton John and David Furnish, who've been in a domestic partnership for over 15 years, married for the last 4 to 6 years because of legality reasons. But they have this kind of prerequisite for these couples, you know, and especially I think all of us at one point have been like, man, how does, you know, these people who are of such celebrity status stay in, like, it's always a genuine surprise when they see that, or even I think so, when you see a celebrity couple that have been married for so long.
Oh, for sure.
You're like, oh, how did they do it?
Yeah.
You know, like, you think about yourself, you're like, man, it's hard, and how does someone like that do it?
Yeah, for example, like Michael J. Fox and Tracy, you look at them and you're like, man, how long, like, how did they make it work? What was the secret? And I know, Mike, I know you always have your headphones on when we travel, but whenever I do see, you know, a sweet old couple or when I'm on the plane traveling by myself, I'm always like, how long have you been married? And then I always say like, okay, what's your secret? And whenever I play shows, I usually sing Love and then I celebrate whoever has had the longest marriage. And so, you know, some of these people are 30, 40 years and I'm always like, what's your secret? And I'll never forget this one guy. He's like, over medicating. And I was like, no. And one of them was just like, the wife was like, we're best friends.
Oh.
Yeah, as he's like.
He's like, yeah, okay. But that's the cool thing about this book, though, because it, I mean, they get these people, these celebrity couples to really open up and share things that they've been through, what has helped it work for them. And it's just, what's great about it is, you know, a lot of things that Jana and I have shared, you know, you guys have commented and responded saying, because of what we share, you don't feel so alone. And this book, like, epitomizes that, where it's like, man, if all these couples that a lot of us look up to, you know, and hold with such high regard, and they go through what they go through, and all of their marriages, they all look different. Mm-hmm. Not one of them is the same. Now, you know, some of them have similar beliefs, but some can have polar opposite beliefs in certain things, like, you know, the classic debate of going to bed angry versus not going to bed angry. And I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. One of the things in Ray Romano and his wife, Anna's story is Ray says, it's good to have the same outlook, the same values. But then it's also, and he goes, I'm just speaking for ourselves. It's also that we're compatible. She's that person. I'm this person. I'm this person who performs and needs attention. She's that person who doesn't feel neglected by this person. So, I mean, especially in this business, the pieces have to fit that way. And I think about, it's just like, you know, who's your person? Have you found your person? Are you with your person? You know, is that person, because like with the Ray story, he's like, I need attention and I need someone.
I need laughs.
I need laughs and I need someone to just be that supportive stay at home mom, you know, and rock. And I need to like feel like I'm, you know, a funny person. And it's, and she's that person for him. So it's like, what is it like? So I'll ask you, like, what makes you that person, or me be that person, or maybe I'm not.
God, you are, you are my person. And I think,
just love that. Like, you're my person.
I think that's something that you find over time, because maybe some people who are newly together, newly married, might give a fluffy answer. But I think you start to realize when you go through the day-to-day, the monotony and the grinding of marriage and having a family, the little things of how you balance each other out and how much, you know, you and I have commented how much we balance each other out in the day-to-day stuff, mm-hmm. you know, with certain things. And it's because of that, that even that simple stuff reassures me. I'm like, this is my person. I was like, because if I had somebody like me, it wouldn't be nearly as passionate, nearly as magical, and I wouldn't be a better person. You know what I mean? And kind of to that topic, there's something on John McEnroe and Patti Smith's story. You know, it even starts off the chapter where there's a quote that says, women are notorious for saying, oh, he's got the potential, but potential is not good enough. Marry the person, don't marry potential.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I want to ask Phil and Marlo about that question too, but gets you thinking, is like in Ray Romano's case and his wife, you know, how many of us out there are marrying based on potential? You know, are people accepting, can people accept who's in front of them? Yeah, people will grow,
mm-hmm.
but you can't ask for this drastic change.
Yes, I do fear though that, and I know that I've been where I've almost thought I could change the person. You know, mm-hmm. and I think, because I think we as women, and I'm not saying to categorize just us, but I feel like, I think a lot of women can be like, oh, I can change that. Or like,
right.
No, like I'll be the one he doesn't do this with, or I'll be the one like to change that. And when it kind of hits you in the face, it's like, no.
Right.
No, you won't.
And
then you might help them grow and be sure. a better person, kind of.
You're doing for me.
So that could be for sure the case, but to just straight up change, like they're going to stop smoking marijuana because they know I hate marijuana.
Right.
It's like, well.
I mean, to that point, I mean, I think men even look at women in that regard where we kind of put that power in you as well, where I always told myself back when I was single, it's like, when I get married, I won't, you know, mess around anymore.
Mm.
It's like, because the woman will change me. It'll be because of that.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Like I put such high, you know, expectations on that as well. Even though, as you and I found out, has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
In my situation, at least. So it's just interesting if, you know, I think it's important. I think that's an important thing to kind of touch on. And I can't wait to talk to Phil and Marlo about it, on those kind of expectations. But you want to take a break and get them on?
Yeah, I'm so excited. So excited. Okay, so we are waiting on Marlo and Phil. Are there any ones that, any relationships from the Bryan Cranston and his wife, or there's, remember Deepak and Chopra?
Yeah.
They're in there as well. Another great couple that there's Lily Tomlin and Jane Wagner, Sully the captain, Chip and Joanna, Ted Danson, Mary. I always wondered how their relationship, like, because there's just Billy, Janice Crystal,
LL Cool J and Simone Smith,
Kevin Bacon, Kira Sedgwick. I hope everyone gets this book because it's awesome. And I'm you know, we're only kind of little more than a half in, and I'm just so enjoying it. But is there one that you just really loved reading?
I think, you know, kind of to my point earlier about how can someone of that stature, that lifestyle, be in a committed marriage or relationship for however many years they have? And LL Cool J is one of those.
How long has he been married for?
They've been married for 25 years.
Wow. And he, man, the height of his career.
Yeah. I mean, they met when they were just teens. He had one record out. He was at the beginning of his career. So he hadn't really hit it like mainstream yet. And there's only a 2-year period that they were apart from each other, but that was still when they were just dating. They weren't even married yet. So
any takeaways from that one?
I think just their maturity talking about their relationship. It's just the way they talk to each other, the way they talk about their marriage. There's just such kind of mutual respect there that you know they value what each other is saying.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a cool thing about the book. It gives a lot of dialogue.
So in the book too, it'll say, you'll see the actual dialogue of what they said. So it's
the conversation. So to have like, Phil says this, and then, LL Cool James, he goes by Todd. Todd says this, Simone says this, Marlo says this.
He goes by Todd?
Yeah.
I never knew that. So that's a takeaway.
See, the beginning of the chapter, Phil's like, so what do I call him? Like, LL Cool J, Jay. And his assistant was like, no, just call him Todd.
What was that shark movie LL Cool J was in? Deep. What? What was that?
Deep Blue Sea.
Deep Blue Sea. Wasn't there a song that he had in there?
Oh, God, it was so good.
It's driving me crazy. I'm going to look it up.
It was so bad, it was good.
It was so bad, it was good.
What about for you? Which one stood out so far?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I would say Michael J. Fox has kind of made me a little sad.
Really?
Well, he's just... Here, I'll pull up one of the quotes that they talked about. But obviously, he got diagnosed a couple.
Parkinson's.
Yeah. It's been, I don't want to misquote it, but it's been at least 15 years, hasn't it, since he's been diagnosed with Parkinson's?
Yeah, I think so.
And she actually got, Marlo got, she cried after she left their interview.
Wow.
And, because she just saw the beauty. One of the things that she wrote, and I'll tell you right now, I'm going to my little dog ear thing. And she said, first of all, Tracy said, in marriage, you have to take it all, the good with the bad. And if you love somebody, you deal with whatever it is they're dealing with. Their issues become their issues. And I really took a lot from that because that's so true. I mean, especially in the vows, when you marry someone, it's till death do us part.
Sickness and in health.
Sickness and in health. And, that's exactly her thing. In marriage, you have to take it all, the good with the bad. If you love somebody, you deal with whatever it is they're dealing with. Their issues become your issues. And, just with sickness or within addiction or within compulsive this or personality, like your whatever issue that you have or start having in a marriage becomes your spouse's issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't have to take it on, but it's still an
right.
issue.
It's their choice whether or not to be a part of it, to take it on. And that kind of brings me to the question that we've gotten a lot, and it's like, how do you know to stay? How do you know it's worth it? And I just, thinking of that quote and what we've talked about is, even with that mindset of it becomes your cross to bear, your burden, I'm not saying it necessarily from a negative place, but it still takes both people,
mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where it's not like, well, I'm married, I just have to deal with this.
Yeah. And she says, Michael and Tracy showed me to the door. This is Marlo speaking. And I began the short walk home. I hadn't taken more than a few steps before I began to cry. What I'd witnessed for the past 90 minutes was the very heart of the marital bond. It was uncanny to me, and it remains so today. That love and pain, joy and sadness, the best and the worst, can coexist so closely and yet with such grace. Michael's illness is always there. The movement he has little control over is there. His disease is in their marriage, and their marriage is in his disease. They are braided as a given, and that braid is made of love and commitment and steel. It filled me with love for them, and it filled me with love for my own husband. Mm. This is marriage.
Wow.
And I just remember, when I read that the other day, I was just like, it gave me chills because that's so true. I mean, through illness, through all of it, that is a part of the marriage, and you take on these. It's almost like when we talk about in our book, babe, the baggage. Like, it's not saying that's baggage, but it is in a sense where you take on some person's maybe
emotional past baggage.
Childhood wounds, or that those become part of the marriage
for sure.
And it's just, yeah, it just made me really reflect a lot about, you know, our situation and addiction and mm-hmm. and it's just because that is, you know, it's our issue now. It's not just yours. Right. And again, I don't take it on, but it is something that we do together as a team.
And it affects you.
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, you also, yes, yes, it affects. But at the same time, like, it's there. And how do I say this? Like, I'm not trying to.
It affects you, but it's not your responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, there you go. And I'm not, like, I don't play, even though some would say I play victim, I don't, like, I'm not playing victim to it.
No.
It's just, it's there, and we acknowledge it, but it's still part of staying and knowing things, just like you know that I don't know, what's one thing that you know is one of my issues?
You're perfect, honey.
Oh, my God, no, shut up. No, but I'm serious, you know, like, it's, okay, it's almost like, the sign-up sheet, it's here. We've signed up for it.
Right.
We didn't sign up for it, but it's there, and this is marriage, and we have to navigate it together.
Yeah. Like, for me, it would be compromising on your timeline. So, like, with your timeline of things, you want things done. Like, there's no better time than the present.
That's an issue?
Exactly.
Wait, I'm so confused. Like, why is that an issue?
Sometimes it's drop everything and do it now, you know? And so, but again, that's what I talked about earlier, where we balance each other. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's still a priority of things. Like, this certain thing can wait till tomorrow or can wait till later. It doesn't have to be done right now. We don't have to stress about it right now. We don't have to overthink this situation right now. We can cross certain bridges when we get to them. Right. So that's where I reel us back. But also at the same time, so at moments I am too laissez-faire. So you'll get those things in my head or get it, you know, higher on my priority list because it does need to get done or whatever it is. So,
yeah, for sure. And I also think too, I mean, I'll give myself a little more and I'll say, you know, one of the issues that you have to deal with on me is from my past too, where sometimes I can maybe portray that on you unfairly. So just like when we said earlier, like childhood wounds, or for mine, mostly like adolescent. But like, there can be certain things where it can, unfortunately, you take the brunt of it because of, you know, things that I'm still trying to work through, you know, and in our relationship and stuff.
For sure.
To like do better and not to like, it's not put your face on it, you know?
For sure. I appreciate that.
Also, Kelly Ripa and Mark Consuelos, they were also in the book, and I loved reading their thing too. Right when they got married, she threw the ring. Like, they were over. So there's some juicy stuff in there too. It's so good. But let's take one more break, and hopefully we'll be able to get them on.
So talking about all this stuff kind of made me think of something. I was on our buddy Nick Woodard 615 podcast, you know, me, him, and his brother kind of having some dad talk not too long ago. And we were talking about relationships and stuff, and I kind of said something, making a point of, I feel like when someone is asked the question, why do you love your partner? Why do you love your spouse or whoever? If someone answers quickly, then it's surface level.
Interesting.
Because it's easy to say, because love, as you and I have found out, it's more than just a feeling. It's a concept. It is a feeling, but there's so much more attached to it. It's respect. It's understanding. It's forgiveness. There's so much where it's more than just, oh, why do you love Jana? Oh, she's beautiful. She's hardworking. She's this, like, sometimes it's
thank you so much.
Sometimes when asked that question, it's almost hard to put into words, because how do you put into words everything we've been through, mm-hmm. and all the reasons that I love you into single adjectives? Like, it's difficult when you really love somebody, when you're really committed in working at the relationship that you're in. And I think what you're reading, what Marla was saying about Michael J. Fox's story at the end of that, was so beautiful. And that had me thinking about it. I'm like, when she was like, this is marriage, like braided together and all of this stuff. I was like, it's so much more than these surface level adjectives on why we love each other. Mm-hmm. So I just thought what Marla said was beautiful. And it just kind of had that, it reminded me of that topic that I talked about with Nick.
So what did you come to the conclusion of?
On why I love you?
Yeah.
That would take a whole episode, honey.
Were you able to think about anything?
Shannon's got her fishing rod out, fishing right now for...
I'm just curious, like, if anything, like, because that's a problem too. Like, what if you couldn't find anything? Like, what if you're like, like, that's a bummer too. Like,
for
when,
sure.
When you start to, when you don't really, when you can't say why you love your spouse, and that must be the worst feeling. Because I've gotten there with relationships before, be like, why do I, like, I don't even think I love you. And that, like, that realization is crazy. So, I mean, just think, like, if someone's listening right now and thinking about, okay, what are the reasons, like, why do I love my husband? And if you're sitting there and you're just going, well, like, that's sad. That's almost a sad realization. Yeah.
That's a great point, honey. And it's, I'm sure there's people out there that even if they thought about it right now, like, oh, why do I love my boyfriend or my significant other, whoever, they might be like, oh, actually, I don't know.
Which is why I want to go thinking, like, that just sparked when I was reading this book the other day with Jamie Lee Curtis and her husband, Christopher Guest. And she said, Jamie goes, the secret to marriage is how much hatred can your marriage actually survive? And Marlo actually goes, hatred? And Jamie says, yes, the idea that you wouldn't hate the other person is crazy. I think what happens is that people have an idealized agreement. They go into this thing with all the best intentions, and at some point I think they start hating some things, and then they get really terrified and they leave. And what I'm saying is, if our contribution to your book about marriage is the word hatred, then both of us, I think, will feel really good. I'm not saying that we have a perfect marriage. We don't. I don't think there is one. But I think what people want to know is that the other people, this is huge, but I think what people want to know is that other people struggle and that life is hard. It's the reason that quote from The Princess Bride is so profound. Life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says differently is selling something. And so I think people actually want to know that other people have struggled.
Yeah.
And then her husband said, and that they're not alone. And I love this too, because Jamie Lee Curtis is 20 years sober. She goes, there's another quote I learned from recovery. If you stay on the bus, the scenery will change. That basically means that feelings come and go, and they can change from one day to the next. You may hate your spouse one day, and the next day you don't hate them, but you wake up and it's a new day and a fresh start. The scenery has changed. And to end all this, Jamie goes, what's the secret to staying married? Don't leave.
Boom. That's awesome. That's like mic drop right there.
Look, I mean, I get people sometimes have no choice but to leave. Because
sure.
I truly do believe that if there's just one person working in the marriage, it's not going to last. And we talk about that a lot in our book,
right.
Good Fight. It's, which by the way, pre-order. You can pre-order at JannaAndMike.com. But it's, two people have to do the work. But there's going to be some times where you might have to pick up the slack for the other person.
Oh,
and vice versa.
For sure.
But I do, you know, the hatred word is just, you know, because there might be to that question, there might be a time when you're thinking, do I even love my spouse right now?
Well, I think, and that's where it goes into this, the idea, but between like and love, right? It's like, I don't like you right now, but you know, I still love you. Because to Jamie Lee Curtis's point, it's like, I don't like you today, but I'm going to stay on the bus because in theory, I'm gonna love you tomorrow or the next day or the you know what I mean? Like, so you don't always have to like each other, because God knows we don't always like each other.
I just, my mom always told me that hate was such a strong word, and to never hate. Like, anytime I ever said I hate her, my mom would be, my mom would ground me if I said the word hate.
Mm-hmm.
I was not allowed to say the word hate. Like, it was just, because, you know, as little girls, you're like, I hate you. It's like, my mom would slap me and send me up to my room. Seriously, I would get grounded for the word hate. So hate, kind of, I'm like, hate is such a scary word to me that I'm like, I don't know if I could ever say to you, I hate you. Even though there are plenty of times
I have before. In the dark days.
I would maybe have called you every other F-bomb and a-hole in the world, but I don't think I could actually say I H-A-T-E-U.
Ooh, she spelled it out. She really don't want to say it.
No, but I'm just saying, like, I just, like, I, that's just such a strong word to me.
For sure. I respect your beliefs.
You're like, but I hate you. No. I've hated you.
No, not at all.
It's interesting, though.
It is interesting.
But I get it. Like, I just, I think, for me, like, maybe what would make me feel better is, like, I've disliked you plenty and you've disliked me plenty.
Right.
The hate's just a little, but it's interesting. How much hate can your marriage survive?
Yeah. Well, let's talk to Phil and Marlo about it. Get them on, and I can't wait.
I'm so excited.
All right, for all of our listeners, we've been teasing this all episode, and we're so, so, so privileged and excited to have the wonderful Phil Donahue and Marlo Thomas on our show today. Thank you both so much for being here.
Yay!
Yay.
Thank you.
So
thank
you. We have been reading your book like crazy. It's such a great book. I love the concept,
how you
guys went about it. But I kind of want to dive first into to Marlo. Marlo, I was laughing when I was reading your part where you said that you didn't really even know if you wanted to get married, and that you said marriage is like living with a jailer you have to please. And I was just reading at the poolside. I was like, I was just dying laughing because you were just like, you had no interest at all in getting married.
No, never. Well, you know, I grew up with my father was one of 10 Lebanese kids. 9 of them were boys.
Wow.
So I saw 9 Lebanese marriages dominated by these men. I mean, and they were very loving. They weren't abusive or anything. They were very loving husbands and loving dads, but they were the boss. And the wives were in service to them. And I mean, so that's the model I saw. And on my mother's side there, she was one of 5 Italians, 4 girls and a boy, and they all had those same marriages. So to me, that was the definition of marriage, and it was completely irresistible. I mean, I thought, well, that's just not for me. And I wasn't upset about it or anything. I just knew that's where I didn't want to go. And I had another line, which was, marriage is like a vacuum cleaner. You stick it to your ear, and it sucks out all your energy and ambition. That's my other one. So nobody thought I would ever get married. And I don't think I would have had
had you fallen in love with Phil on national television.
Yeah, well, that didn't hurt. But also, the world had changed a little bit, you know, and the definition of marriage relaxed. And I could see that I could, with the right partner, define my own marriage, that it didn't have to be that really strict place that I saw, but it could be a roomy enough place to embrace 2 whole careers, 2 whole lives, because I had my own life, my own name, my own house, my own career, mm-hmm. as did Phil. So we were very much the mirror image of each other in terms of personality and ambition and so forth. And that wouldn't have been possible. I could never have married a man like my father or my uncles. It just wouldn't have happened. So a lot had to happen. I had to meet the right man who I could define my marriage with, and make a new model. And it's funny, the first 5 years of our marriage, we lived in 2 different cities. I was working in LA, he was working in Chicago. doing the Donahue show. I was producing like about 12 movies in those 5 years. And he was raising his four sons. He had custody of his four boys. They were in school. So we were traveling every weekend to each other. And an aunt of mine said to me, "That's not a real marriage." And I thought to myself, this is why I never married, because I thought marriage had to be her definition. Mm-hmm. And in fact, she thought my marriage wasn't even a real marriage. And then, of course, after 5 years, Phil moved the show to New York. I moved myself to New York, and we made a new life. But that wouldn't have been possible. I mean, even a man making the move, you know, when we went on the 60 Minutes, 60 Minutes did a beautiful show on Phil, on the Donahue show. And I, of course, was interviewed for it. And he said to me, you know, he said, "I don't know that it's right for a man." He said, "Maybe I'm old fashioned, but it's not the man that moves. It's the woman that moves." And I said, "Oh, Mike, you're not old fashioned. You're Neanderthal." And so, you know, and I loved him because he left it in, you know, that I called him Neanderthal. But that really was. And Mike Wallace was an older man. I mean, if he were alive now, he'd be over 100 years old. So for him, that was just a whole other world where men move their jobs for a woman.
Right.
You know, but the reason he moved it is that we talked about how could we make a life together. And Phil said, I can't make a career in Los Angeles. I mean, I'm not interested in Hollywood personalities. You know, he put some on, but mostly he was in the world of politics and so forth. And I said, well, I can't work in Chicago. I mean, the places where I can work are LA and New York. And so he said, well, I could work in New York. So we actually chose New York. You know, we could have chosen Budapest. I mean, we chose mm-hmm. a place where we both could work. That's what that decision was about.
And ultimately, it seems like you guys chose each other. And Marlo, I have a question for you again before we go to Phil. And in the beginning of the John McEnroe, Patti Smith, you know, section of the book, there's a quote saying, "Women are notorious for saying, oh, he's got potential, but potential is not good enough." And it says, "Marry the person, don't marry potential." When you and Phil began to court each other, was there anything that you saw you're like, okay, I know I love Phil, but there's some things I need to change? Or did you just accept him for who he was?
No, we did not accept each other for who we were. I think we fought pretty hard the first 10 years of our marriage, I think, because we were in a power struggle, really. It wasn't that I wished that he was someone else. I just wished that he was more like me, and he wished that I was more like him, you know, that kind of thing. But we, you know, one of the interviews that I love in our book, Judy Vioras, who's a great children's writer and also written books for adults as well. She and her husband, Milton, have been married for 60 years. And she said, you know, no matter how hard you try, he's never going to be you, and you're never going to be him. So you're just going to have to take it as a given that you're different people and accommodate the differences. Don't try to change him. You don't have to compromise your soul for it. Just accommodate who he is, accommodate who she is. And so we did do that on our own, but she put it into words that I had not put into words before. And that really is the truth. I wanted him to do things more my way. He wanted me to do things more his way. And being type A personalities, we're both bossy. We both ran our own shows. And so we were used to people doing it the way we wanted to do it. And you had to get marriage. The other person doesn't do it the way you want to do it. You have to negotiate that. And you have to step back and say, okay, you know, he's more laid back than me. I'm a very assertive kind of personality. And so if there's a challenge, you know, I'm the one that runs for the telephone. Let's call this one. Let's do that one. Let's find a solution. He's the one that says, let's just think this out a second. Wait a minute. What's the pros? What's the cons? That used to annoy me. You know, I'd say, come on, we can do this. We can fix this. And he would be annoyed that I was impulsively going forward. But we learned through the years to appreciate each side of it, that a lot of the times it was better to step back and look at it. And a lot of times it was better to jump for a solution. But we had to negotiate that rather than insist that we do it immediately the way the other one wanted to do it, and then not pout about it afterward if we didn't get our way. So that takes some doing.
No question. And Phil, let's get to you for a second. With as long as y'all have been married, and before we dive in with some of the celebrity couples y'all interviewed and shared stories with, what advice would you have, just in your personal experience, for young married men, even like myself? My wife and I just celebrated 5 years married, and but just what, through your experience, would you have to tell someone like me or other guys out there?
Well, you know, a marriage is a high point. I mean, the white dress, the rice. I mean, it's a one, you know, dancing, all your friends and family. You know, and you're married in a cloud of lust. And, you know, suddenly things become pretty routine day by day.
And challenging.
Yeah. And I think it's important for people to anticipate this. It's amazing, really, that we get married way up here, higher than a kite, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have to take out the garbage. So, you know, a lot of things change after you're married, and I think that the marriages that last are between two people who anticipate these peaks and valleys. There's no such thing as smooth sailing from beginning to end. We learned this in our travels, meeting all these couples, that, you know, it's amazing that the ones you look on from the outside appear to be so idyllic. After you talk to them a little while, you begin to realize that they've all faced serious emotional difficulties that they did not anticipate. So, you know, I hate to be the person who brings the dark cloud over everything, but I do think it helps if you anticipate the reality.
I don't think it's a dark cloud. I think what you're saying is important, because, you know, when you're walking down that aisle, all you can think of is how great this person is, and mm-hmm. how great he makes you feel and she makes you feel, and how, you know, you're going to be the couple that has the perfect marriage. Well, you could have a very perfect marriage, except the world comes in at you with disease, with addiction, with loss of money, with loss of job, with a
infidelity.
Sick, with mm-hmm. infidelity, with a sick child, with a child who dies, with a sudden illness. I mean, all these things that have happened. With Jamie Lee Curtis was a drug addict. Her husband didn't even know that. Neil Patrick Harris's husband, David Burka, had severe alcoholism. They didn't get married with those problems or knowing about those problems. Jesse Jackson went off and had an affair with a woman and had a baby outside of the marriage. What's his name? Kira Sedgwick and Kevin Bacon lost all their savings, 30 years of savings, in the Bernie Madoff scandal. Judy Woodruff and Al Hunt had three children, and their firstborn was born with spina bifida, which is a lifelong problem. And Michael J. Fox and Tracy Pollan, 3 years into marriage, were given his diagnosis of Parkinson's, which would be a lifelong situation. So all of these things happen. But you said a great thing, Philip. You said, well, yeah, were you, you know, about the fact that these people really wanted it to work.
Yeah, that's, you know, you can see it, feel it in what they say, how they act. The marriages that last are between two people who really want the marriage to last. Right. I mean, it has to have the will there. And all of them did. I mean, that was one common denominator of all the couples that we interviewed.
They really, and they went to marriage counseling. They went to seminars if they had troubles. They really were invested in it. They weren't running for the exit sign when the big storm came. So when any of those things came, like infidelity, loss of money, loss of job, all that stuff came, illnesses, they didn't run away. And I got the feeling, and I hadn't really thought of it before, after talking to all these couples and hearing how they went through each challenge, I thought, you know, I bet most people get a divorce or run away because they're afraid they can't do it. Mm-hmm. They're afraid they don't have what it takes to face one of these big things. They just, they don't, it's got to be, because what, I mean, you got to get chicken. You got to get scared. What else would it be?
There's no question. And Jana and I have experienced a lot of that firsthand through addiction, infidelity, all of that in our marriage too. And you guys are kind of preaching exactly what we like to say as well, which is, you know, it's much harder to stay than it is to leave. And, you know, hitting the eject button and just walking away from those problems when you're not, when, like you said, Marlo and Phil, when you're scared of them or don't know how to handle them, it's ultimately what Jana and I found out is similar to the stories that you're sharing. It's just, we wanted it and we were going to do whatever we needed to make it work. And it's such a, you know, reassuring feeling, like having couples to, of the, you know, celebrity stature that you've interviewed, that you guys are, and understanding that the rest of us aren't alone. Like, we all have our crap. We all have something that we've dealt with. And that's what Jan and I really got from your book, is just every story, there's something. Everyone's married.
Yeah. And just like with the, with, you know, the Michael J. Fox, and Michael and I were talking about that. I was like, it gave me goosebumps when he said, you know, she said in marriage, you have to, you know, take it all, the good with the bad. And, you know, their issues become your issues. And with our marriage, is, you know, his addiction then became, you know, I don't take it on, but it's still a part of our marriage now. And it's something we have to,
of course,
work together on, you know?
I think when you go through it, it's like going through a fire. Mm-hmm. When you get off to the other side of the fire, you burned off a lot of crap that was there. You burned off all the unnecessary stuff that you fight about. Because once you go through a big thing, you know, you burned off the petty stuff, and now you're kind of naked. Now you can begin.
Well, and I wonder, because, you know, because our first five have been just, it's been a battle. But I wonder now, okay, are we going to, because I feel stronger than I did the day that I married him. And, you know, even through all the discoveries and stuff, like, I feel we're stronger than we would have been if that didn't happen, in a weird way. Like, I hate that it did for all the pain and all the turmoil, right. But I almost, like, I love him more because I know all the scars and because of the pain that, like, we've pushed through and we've endured, that now we can communicate more.
And you're in it together. Mm-hmm. and communicate together. And then, and also to have a set of boundaries that, you know, I can't tolerate not being able to trust you. Mm-hmm. I have to know that you're my guy, you're my girl. Mm-hmm. You know, that you aren't going to wander away from me. I mean, those are commitments that we make to each other. You know, Phil and I mean, we've been married 40 years, so we have discussed all of those things.
Was there something in your marriage where it was almost a breaking point where you just couldn't do it anymore?
Well, I think for us, it was really the being apart. In other words, our careers were so important to us, each individually. And we were able to say to each other, you know, verbally, I really respect your work. I really respect your work. I respect your ambition. I respect your ambition. But deep down, we really didn't. Deep down, we really were saying to ourselves, if you really loved me, you give that a little bit of that up. If you really loved me, you would, you know, not do that so much. The truth is that the ambition that I felt for, I mean, a small story about that is that at one point Phil was mad at me that I wasn't coming to Chicago more because I was working in Los Angeles and I was working as a producer and the star of these movies. So I wasn't able to just run away for 5 days. I had to be there. And so one weekend, you know, I would get there on a Friday night, leave on a Sunday night. And he'd say, well, why can't you come on Thursday? Why can't you leave on Monday? So he was questioning my real commitment, you know, to the marriage. And I said to him, and we were fighting a lot. And I said to him, I said, you know how ambitious you are. You know how much you've invested in your work. I mean, his first marriage really kind of fell apart because he was holding down three jobs and trying to make it and, you know, didn't give as much to the marriage and as all to the family as one might have wanted. Anyway, I said, so you know how much you've sacrificed for your work. You know how ambitious you are. You know how much you put into it, how hard you've had to work to become who you are. I said, well, put a skirt on it, and that's me. So if you don't understand that, that's me, then we can't get there from here. You know, and that really kind of was a turning point for us, because you can say all the verbal, oh, I really believe in you, I think you're really, what your dreams are important. But if it's an inconvenience to you, you know, if you're, you know, then you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. It's got to be all the way. And that's what I saw in my parents' marriages and all my uncles' marriages. Sure, they loved their wives. They wanted their wives to have happiness and all that, but not an inconvenience to them. You know?
Heaven forbid.
Yeah. So I think our ambition was a separating situation for us.
For sure. And nowadays, how do you guys manage your conflict resolution when you have arguments, when things come up? What's y'all's secret or your key to kind of, you know, resolving those?
Well, one of the we interviewed James Carville and Mary Madeline.
Is that when you guys were fighting right before you went to the interview?
Oh, no.
That was Tony and Brooke. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
That was so funny. I was like, I loved that moment. Sorry. But it's like, they're like, fighting. We were fighting. And you're like, secret, we were fighting too.
Right. James Carville's story is funny.
Well, James Carville said, when you find yourself and your spouse going around and around on an issue that is really Mickey Mouse when you step back, the thing I like to do is I say out loud to my spouse, let's kick that can down the road. And it sounds very cliched and corny until you do it, which I did.
We both came back off the road and we were going around and around on one of those things where you said you did this. No, I didn't. I said you said, you know, back and forth. And usually ends up with somebody pouting. And Phil said to me, oh, let's just kick this can down the road. And it's true. You can just say, oh, this is stupid. Let's stop it. So that's one way. It's kind of a good tool. But I think really more important is that when you get to an impasse where he's holding ground and I'm holding ground and we're both like stubbornly hanging on to what we each feel is the right way to do something or the wrong way that the other one did, whatever it is, that impasse, somebody has to be the one to break the impasse. That's the only way a marriage is going to work, is that at different times, each of you will, I call it, take the walk across the desert like Sadat did, you know? Somebody has to walk across the desert and say, look, I'm sorry if it sounded like this, or I'm sorry that I did that. I'm sorry I made you feel bad. Or did I do something that made you feel bad? What are you so pissed off about? Let's talk it out. What are you feeling? You know, not that, as Peter Herman, Mariska Hargitay's husband said, you can't say, I'm sorry if I made you feel bad. You know they feel bad. I'm sorry I made you feel bad. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry I said that made you feel bad. I was cranky. I was in a bad mood because I just had a fight with my sister, or I got rejected for something I wanted, whatever it was. You have to look into yourself, because a lot of the times when people lash out at each other or pout or something, it's because something else was going on also, you know. But hanging on and holding a grudge, that's just absolutely a no-no. You just have to give that up. It is just bad behavior. You're going to get nowhere with it. Being stubborn, pouting. One of us used to pout a lot. I wonder who that was.
I was a Hall of Fame pouter.
Yeah, he really was.
That's funny. It's interesting. More, I feel like more men do that.
I feel like we get defensive more.
Yeah. I don't know. I, you know, I'm half Italian and half Lebanese, so I'm a very out there kind of person. You don't ever have to try to read my mood. It's pretty obvious. And I don't pout.
Marlo,
I make noise.
I'm curious, though, because in the Viola interview, because this is something that I do as well. So you said that you're the chaser and you follow Phil around till you get him to hear you. And I feel like in our relationship, it doesn't work because he shut off. Phil, do you actually hear her when she's going after you? Because I feel like I do that. And Mike's like, I can't hear you right now. And I'm trying to be like, but listen to me, listen, listen. And he's just like, doesn't want anything to do with me. So I'm like, how do you A, make that work? Because I like that strategy. And does it actually work?
Well, after all these years, it works better. It's still his personality to walk away from confrontation. It's still his personality. It isn't even confrontation. He'll confront it, but when he's feeling all tied up inside, he doesn't know how to get it out. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have that. And honey, stop me if I'm wrong, but you don't have a, he doesn't have a built-in path back to the sanity of the situation. He's dealing with it. And sometimes he has to leave the room to deal with it. And I chase him and say, come on, let's talk this out. Come on, let's do this, let's do that. And, and I'll do that. And then sometimes I'll just leave him alone. Mm-hmm. And then a little while later, he'll come to my study or something and say, okay, I'm sorry. Okay, here's what I was thinking. I want it to be over immediately.
Yeah.
He can't get it over it immediately. But he's gotten to a place now where he'll get over it quicker, right? We don't have the same pathway to our own emotions. And nobody does. And everybody is different in that way. And so I think you've kind of given up to it a little bit, right?
Oh, I'm a whole new person.
I think it's really important. It's a very good question. How do you get past those two different? You did it the other day. You were really mad at me about something, and I got upset, and I left the room. I said, "Well, this is just unfair. I'm not going to listen to this." And I left the room. And I went to my study, and about a half hour later, an hour later, you came in and said, "Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that."
And not everybody has two studies, so. it certainly has helped us, but as you can see, I'm sort of a B personality when I'm with Marlo.
That's so untrue.
I think you and I are cut from the same cloth, because this sounds very, very familiar, right, honey?
Well, it's interesting though, because Marlo, what I found is that if I continue to chase Mike, he doesn't hear me, and because I'm almost looking, to resolve, or I want an apology. But when I just stop and I don't do that, he comes back so much quicker and then owns his stuff, and he sees it like way sooner if I'm trying to be like, can't you see that you did this A, B, C, D, and E? And like, but when I just am like, all right, go have whatever mood you want to have, and I stay in the room or I go outside, he almost acknowledges it quicker and comes back quicker if I don't chase him.
That's right.
So that's kind of been working for us. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You have to respect and accommodate the other person's ability to find the path back to their own sanity. Because it's an insane moment when you get that kind of upset. You're not in your comfort zone. You've fallen out of your comfort zone. And again, it's fear. Doesn't know how to handle that particular emotion, whatever it is.
For sure. And then in the Jamie Lee Curtis and Christopher Guest, was it hatred? Was that the word?
Yes.
Okay, because at the beginning of the show, we started talking about that because, I was chuckling, but also I'm like, I don't know. I've disliked Mike and he's disliked me many times in our short 5 years, but I don't know if I could say that I hate him. I don't know. I just feel like, so I'm curious, have y'all felt that or what's
no,
your.
That's, no, actually, no. That's why I said a word that I made her repeat it.
Yeah.
I she said that the psychiatrist said to her, a marriage depends on how much hatred you can bear, something like that. And I thought, tolerate, how much hatred you can tolerate. And I thought, wow, hatred. No, I have never felt hatred toward Phil. I've been really mad at him, really pissed off and want to kill him, but I haven't hated him.
I love it. Like, I've wanted to kill too, but I still don't hate you.
Exactly. Yeah, no, hate is a pretty strong word.
Yeah.
I once asked Billy Graham on my show, have you ever thought about divorce? And he said, divorce? Never. Murder? Yes.
That's perfect.
Yes.
Was there anyone with the 40 couples that you interviewed, was there anybody on your list that you weren't able to get in the book, or it just scheduling didn't work out, that you'd like to still have this conversation with in the future?
Well, we very much wanted to interview the Obamas and the Bushes. I was just so interested on, you know, being famous is one thing, but being scrutinized every minute of the day
for sure
is another. And I was just interested how their marriages didn't grow or did grow, or, you know, what did that do? Because I know in our marriage, when we were first married, I was a little scared off by the scrutiny that we were put under right away. I mean, we were married about 6 months, and there were already reports that we were getting a divorce and people making up stories that we'd seen a lawyer, and, you know, and none of it had happened, but it was like, wow, this is going to be weird, you know? People just can make up things.
For sure.
Thank God this was before social media. But, but it would appear in, you know, in crummy papers like the Inquirer and stuff, but still it's out there. And what happens is it's out there in a crummy newspaper, but then the next time you do an interview in a good newspaper, it'll say there's been reports of they're getting a divorce. And you say, but wait a minute.
Right.
That was in a paper that's, says it has a story about a woman who gave birth to a whale. Why would you take that seriously? So they follow you around, you know, these stories. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't like the scrutiny and the made up divorce stories at first. So I can imagine how, you know, what that kind of life must do, and how does it work on your marriage? Like for me, when there would be stories about us that were untrue, I wanted to immediately have a statement and have the press agent put out something. And Phil's personality was never complain, never explain. So we battled about that. And I would say, yeah, but if we don't say anything, if we don't defend ourselves, it will look like it's true. And he will say, you're just going to feed the story. Mm. Never complain, never explain. Mm. Well, it turned out that I did it his way. I mean, I decided I didn't do it his way to please him. I did it his way because I decided that he was right. It was contrary to what was my impulse, but I thought about it and thought, he's right. No, I didn't do it just to please him, because then I would have resented it.
Yep.
I did it because I was convinced by his point of view, but you have to be open to it.
I totally get that point. I think with us too, you know, things had come out in the public with us, and there was a point where I kind of wanted to talk about it more, just because to set the narrative, and, you know, we kind of struggled on that a little bit. So there's definitely positives and negatives to it, because, you know, now that y'all have talked about your story, you're helping a lot of people too, you know, and I think that's kind of the silver lining to being married for 40 years and sticking through it and having the anonymity, I guess, in the very beginning of not sharing things, but then, you know, now having your book and telling your story, that just shows, you know, what y'all have been through and everything else. So I kind of love that as well.
Yeah. And this may be a little bit of a cynical question, but with everyone that you interviewed, did you guys ever question their level of honesty when sharing such intimate stories or, you know, ideas about their marriage?
I don't know. Did you?
Well, I was shocked at how open everybody was.
For sure.
Well, when they let us in, you know, when we'd go and knock on their door, I remember they'd looked at you like, what's your angle here?
Right.
And the minute I said something about our marriage, no matter how trivial, it just seemed to blow open a large door. And they couldn't wait to talk about their marriage. So, you know, I went into this thinking we'd do maybe 25-minute, 35-minute interviews. Mm-hmm. And how long did we?
3 hours.
Wow.
It would be 3 hours. And, you know, the book was originally supposed to be 350 pages. It's 600 pages.
Yeah.
And we had told the publisher that we expected that each chapter would be about 2,500 words, which is a nice article length. But each chapter is 5,000 words. Elton John is 6,000 words. Because the stories were very rich. We had not expected them to be that interesting. And when we got the, you know, we obviously taped it, and then we got the transcript back, and we would go through it and circle, you know, what we thought was really good. And there was just a lot that was so good. Right. And then we started taking ourselves out of it in order to make them shorter. And then we realized, but if we take ourselves out of it, it's not really honest as to what had happened. Mm-hmm. So then we put ourselves back in it, and they were just very long. And I, when we turned the book in, we thought for sure that our publisher at Harper's would ask us to cut it or to take some stories out in order to make it shorter. But she didn't. She called us and said, I think these stories are very good and I don't want you to touch a word of it. So we didn't. We were very lucky.
Yeah, we second that just from our experience of reading it, because it doesn't feel like a 600-page read at all. And it's, like you said, if you guys took your part out or try to condense these stories, it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be as impactful. And so I just know from, we're huge fans of it and what you guys did with this book. So
yeah, and just, again, not feeling alone, because sometimes I think, are we the only people that have struggled in our marriage? Are we the only people that have had these issues? And then when I read stories of other couples and you, it's just like, wow, okay, we're not alone. So thank you for having
another vessel. We're not that crazy.
For other people and us.
Exactly. And you know what's really interesting is that you're the winner, because mm-hmm. half of us get divorced.
Right.
So that's what's interesting. The statistics are, which was one of the reasons why we were interested in doing the book, the statistics are that half of us get divorced in this country. So the half of us that don't get divorced, us, you, the people in this book, we've had to go through a lot to burn off the bad stuff, to be able to be able to live with another person who's completely different from you. I mean, one of the things Jamie Lee Curtis said mm-hmm. is that we are completely different from each other in every way. There's not, and Rob Reiner said an interesting thing. He said, you have to work your own side of the street first, each of you, before you can come together as a couple. You got to fix up all the stuff that's wrong with you.
And then all the stuff that you dumped on the other side of the street too. So the stuff that I might have dumped on his side of the street and that he dumped on my right. side of the street. Right. So it's like right. double, exactly. it's double cleanup.
Exactly. Exactly. Each person and Ted Danson and Mary Steenburgen talked about that as well. This is his third marriage, her mm-hmm. second marriage. And I said to him, three marriages, where'd you get the optimism to get married a third time? And they've been married 30 years. So it's working. He said, well, I had to change some things about myself. Like I had to stop lying. Mm. He said, I was a liar. I said, about what? He said, about everything. About what I was feeling. I was also unfaithful, but I didn't tell the truth about who I was because I wanted to be the white knight on a white horse. But so I didn't tell what I was really feeling, my insecurities, all that. I kept all that away to look like I was better than I was. I had to learn to be real and vulnerable and say who I was, so that I could, you know, not play games. He said, and early on in my relationship with Mary, when I would start to play a game, she would look at me and I could tell that this, she could tell that it was a lie. She would call me on it. You know, I had to be a better person. I had to be not a better person. I had to be a more honest person of who I was. She could love me who I was. I didn't have to pretend to be somebody else. And I think that's, we do that a lot too, all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris Rock has a great line. He says, when you're dating, you're not really dating the real person. You're dating the representation of that
person.
The sending out their representative, you know, their best self. But when you get married, you're going to see all the other stuff that your representative didn't show before. Mm-hmm. And then you learn to work through that and find those things either darling or attractive or sensitive or sympathetic or downright unacceptable. And you have to work through it, you know?
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, Ted's, just for what you're saying from Ted's story, mirrors kind of my own. And something I've, a mantra for myself to remind myself when I have those moments is just, you know, if I thought the grass was greener, it's just going to be the same story, but a different cast. If I don't, if I'm not introspective, it's going to, the same thing is going to happen. It doesn't matter who my wife is. It doesn't matter who my partner is.
Right.
And so it's just going to be the same thing that Jana and I try to talk about on our show and in the book that we're doing is just, you know, like you guys are saying, you got to clean your side of the street. It starts with you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Why did you decide to do a show?
So it actually started with just me. And I had written a book kind of about things and which, you know, he was not ready for it. And he ripped it up and we got into a big old fight about it. And I was like, but I feel like we went through this so we could help people. And he was still really stuck in his shame at the time. And so then I started this podcast and he came on as a guest. And I said, look, you don't have to say anything. We don't have to talk about addiction. At the time, no one knew about a sex addiction. And I was like, you just go at your own pace. We don't have to tell a soul. And it was, what, two episodes in where
we talked about affairs, you know, me being new in 12-step program of sex addiction, and things just kind of took off. And, you know, just we realized like the same thing that we feel reading y'all's book is what we got to feel as well, with people being like, oh my gosh, you know, my husband's an addict as well. Or because you guys share this, we don't feel so alone. We're dealing with infidelity. And so it kind of grew into what the show is now.
And it's, you know, it's can be challenging at times, but I think this, the silver lining is knowing that we're able to help people just as you guys are doing with your book too. And, you know, now we have a book with HarperCollins as well as there are publishers too. And comes out September about the good fight and things that, you know, we are by no means perfect or experts, you know, have it all figured out. I mean, shoot, we were fighting 30 minutes before this too. And it was just, but here are just some of the things that we learned to keep fighting, because, you know, you got to get in there and you got to work it all out, because, you know, we have two beautiful kids and we want, you know, we want to be good parents and good partners for each other.
It's really, so it's really important to keep fighting. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, we know so many couples who never had a fight, you know, and they're divorced now. Because you're not telling, if you're not disagreeing with your mate, then you're not telling the truth. There's no, people are not born two peas in a pod. I mean, I fight with my brother and sister. I mean, you can't agree with people all the time. Mm-hmm. And if you don't let it out, then you have resentment. I mean, Deborah Roberts, who's married to Al Roker, talked about resentment that she felt, that she gave up a lot of her career in order to take care of their children. He didn't ask her to do that. Mm-hmm. She made that decision to do that, but she resented the fact that he didn't do it. Well, that wasn't his fault. He didn't tell her to do it in the first place, but she felt as a woman, as a mother, that she had to give up a lot of her career, but she never talked about it. She just resented it. And then finally she got it out and they went into marriage counseling and so forth. But that's what happens. If you don't talk about it, it will fester and boil until it becomes impossible. Did you guys go to counseling?
Oh my goodness.
Oh, we've done more therapy, individual, couples.
Retreats. Great. And
retreats, I mean, we've, intensives. We've done it all in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
But I'm more in love with them today than I was yesterday. So I, like, that's because true. Of our struggle. Like I love our struggle. It's been great.
I think if you agree to go to counseling, that is a fabulous act of love. That's a person who really wants to make this happen,
well
to
said.
Make the marriage last. You know, because who wants to go and talk about it with a stranger? But if you agree to do that, that, you know, that's pretty big evidence that you want this marriage. And we discovered that attitude in a lot of the people, the couples we interviewed. Often it's one person that saves the marriage and makes it last.
by bringing up the therapy, but the couple who then do it together, like Ron and Cheryl Howard and Bryan Cranston and Robin Dearden and all of them who did it together, that became, you know, that's what saved their marriage. And that's what Phil said from the very beginning of this talk that we're having, is that really what makes a marriage last is both people want it to last and work for it. And there's just no other way, because there's no way for two individual people, unless you're going to marry a sponge, you know, that's going to work, unless you both invest in it, really have to invest in it. And I think that's the beauty of it and the fun of it. And as you were saying, you love him more because you do see his frailties and his imperfections and his desire that for the love of the two of you, he's willing to solve those challenges.
Absolutely.
That's great. I mean, that really is. I think that is what makes, that's called love. That is it.
Fighting
that
is a good
it.
Fight.
Well, you see, we read about a lot of love in y'all's book, What Makes a Marriage Last. And so
please, everyone, please get this book. It's so, so, so good. And Marlo, I'm from Michigan too, so. Michigan love right here. And we love St. Jude. It's one of the most magical places ever. So thank you for everything you do.
Thank you.
St. Jude.
Oh,
seriously.
Bless your heart.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Within country music, we've been there a bunch with the, you know, the St. Jude radiothon. So just thank you for everything
yeah.
you
oh,
do.
Great.
Phil, I love you. You are an inspiration, both of you too. So thank you so much. Everyone go
thank
get
you.
What Makes a Marriage Last.
Phil, Marlo, thank
you
all so much.
You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Good luck to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, guys.
Have a good one.
Okay. Love.
I mean.
I love them.
I want to be in their next book. I just want to sit down with them and tell stories and have conversations.
Oh, for sure. Marlo just is my spirit animal.
She really is.
I love her. But I hope you guys got a lot out of this. And there's just one thing I want to say too, because you said it's easier to leave. And I just want to say, because some people say.
I didn't mean to say easier, simpler.
Mm,
it's just comparing the decisions.
I got to say, it'd be really effing hard to leave. It takes a lot of cujos, I think, to leave and to be a single parent. Sometimes it's easier to stay.
If you bring kids in that mix.
Yeah, like it's easier to stay when there's, because I just, for the women that have, like I can't, like when I think about being a single parent, sometimes when I'm like, go down to the divorce train in my mind, I'm like, oh shit, I don't know if I want them every day by myself.
No, for sure. I'm saying, I wasn't talking about our situation.
No, I know.
I'm saying divorce in general. That's why, because people think it's easier just to leave.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Generally, that's why it's 50% divorce rate in our country, is because people have this misconception that it's just easier to leave.
Okay.
Cool. Oh, I don't want to go through this pain. I'm just going to leave.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure for those people out there to be like, wait a minute. No.
No, I can't imagine.
I had said that one time and I got in a lot of trouble, so I was just protecting. I knew what you meant. But
right. Yeah. No.
Okay. We'll just leave it with this. This is part of their book in the Tony and Brooke Adams. Brooke says, the bottom line is, and I say this as a woman, women are impossible and men are annoying.
Wow.
We'll leave it at that. See y'all later.
Food for thought. Later.